This is the Apple This Extra.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Apple Viz Extra. I know what probably a lot of you are thinking, and that is, hey, you just had an extra. But we have another one for you, this one covering what's new for the bad and the good. And I guess the bad and the ugly could be the same, so that doesn't really apply. But anyway, I'm Scott Davert here with my co-host, Mr. Thomas Domville. Hello, Thomas.
Hey, Scott. Good to be here.
It's good to be back. I haven't been in the host seat for quite a while, so it's a little different for me. Seems like every time I move, I end up doing it. You know, I did one from Colorado, and one when I moved back to New York, and now I'm in North Carolina, and I'm doing another one. So unless I move soon, I guess this will be the only one for a while.
Well, it's good to have you back on. I'm sure everybody we'll say the same thing. It's great to have you on, and it's good to hear your voice.
Well, we'll find out. we're just getting started. So the purpose of today's podcast, we're going to talk about iOS 11, a little bit about tvOS, and what we've noticed in those releases. I think let's get the bad out of the way first, so that then we can talk about the good. We can end things on a positive note. So Thomas, why don't you tell us what is your least favorite bug in iOS 11?
Well, you know, Scott, I'm going to start out with a little, just a little statement I just want to put out there. I want to make sure our listener knows that it's not about the number of bugs. I do believe this beta has no less and no more bugs than a typical iOS release. I also want to give a big kudos to the Apple accessibility team for their hard work and nailing down a lot of these bugs over the past couple months. I'm not going to get into the numbers because I don't think it's important, but I can assure you there were tons of serious bugs to first start it out with, and they really did an outstanding job in nailing down a lot of these serious bugs down to a very small number. And so as always, they have always listened, and I wish every iOS could be perfect, but it isn't. So that's what the purpose of this. We're going to be real about what we found, and so I'll go ahead and get that out of the way. And my bads, I tell you what, one of the big ones for me, I'm not a Braille user or a low vision user like yourself, and I think it's going to hit harder in those to ground when Scott comes on. But for myself, I'm quite annoyed by the message bug. In the message, the conversation and the compose and all that works just fine. What happens is that when I want to clear up my message, when you try to delete a conversation or a person that you've been talking with, it leaves a kind of a broken link. It leaves something called a null. It'll just say null. And if you think with that too long, it just crashes the apps. Now, the easy side of this is every time you close a message or whatever, have not, I typically go to the app switcher, close the message app, and bring it back up, and then all that stuff is gone. It's usable still, but it is kind of a pain. You have to do that. Now, that's for people that clear things out. Now, I clear mine out pretty regularly. Some people don't. They like to keep all their messages, and so it's not going to really affect you that much, but that's probably the biggest one. There are some minor ones that I come across. I know that David and I were the only one on the team that experienced this problem. It is very rare and seldom, but it's kind of annoying, is that sometimes VoiceOver will just quit. I mean, like, there is no more talking. Like, there's no VoiceOver, but you still hear the VoiceOver sounds. Like, I can hear the click, 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 donk, donk, and things like that, but there's no talking. And yes, if I turn VoiceOver on and off, it doesn't do anything. You have to do a hard reset or just turn off the phone and turn it back on. That is a big enough ordeal that a real major pain. I mean, it takes, 20, 30 seconds to do the whole process of shutting it down and bringing it back up. It doesn't happen very often, but every so often, it's just enough. Of course, it has to be writing something I need to take care of, like somebody's messaging me or something, or I'm watching a movie or something. So there's no rhyme or reason why it happens, but it does. And so I'm going to say those two are probably the biggest ones that bothers me a lot. I know everybody's going to have personal preferences of what they determine what's really bothers them or not. I kind of consider myself a high tolerance. I have a lot of tolerance and for bugs and things like that. But overall, as a blind user with VoiceOver only, if people ask me, should I install it? I tell you what is your tolerance level? If you have a low tolerance and you cannot handle with a lot of little different quirks, then I would probably say hold off until the next release, whatever that might be, maybe 1101, 1102, whenever these things get cleared out enough that it isn't going to be so bothersome. Now, if you have a higher tolerance like myself, I can use it on a regular basis without any problems. Yeah, a few things come and go, but I have no issue with it with myself. And so I think for the average user, I think it's safe to say you can install iOS 11. Now, that's just my personal opinion. Of course, we're going to have all these blogs and comments, and you can read all these things. And so if any of them sounds pretty ugly to you and it's going to make you second guess, if you want to do that, you know what? I listen to your instinct. That's what you need to do, and that's what I'm going to recommend to everybody. However, I'm going to hand this over to Scott because we do have some serious issue. If you're a Braille user or a low vision user, I think you want to give this a listen because I'll let Scott tell you all about that. So what about you, Scott? What is your biggest and most annoying bugs in iOS 11?
Well, before I get into that, to kind of go along with what you were saying about the messages bug, you can still delete them and have an accurate representation if you go to edit and, you know, remove them that way, select them and then delete. So you still have that as an option. It's kind of a workaround, but that can be a critical bug if you're somebody that delete some messages but doesn't delete others. It's sometimes a little difficult to tell, well, what did I really delete? What didn't I delete? So, you know, again, like you were saying, it really is going to depend on each individual user and what they can tolerate and what they can't. You know, for somebody that does a lot of those editing of messages and things like that and clears out certain ones, that's probably a major problem. But I pretty much hold on to all mine, so that doesn't really bother me personally, but there are some bugs that do personally bother me, which is why I still have 10.3.3 on my main device. As a Braille user, they've done a lot of good things, which we'll get into later, but a few of the challenges that you will have as a Braille user are if you're someone who types quickly on the Braille keyboard. So we'll say, you know, 60, 65 words per minute, anything higher than that. The translator starts missing letters, and the further you get into a chunk of text, the more letters it misses and the slower you have to type to make sure everything gets registered. So for someone like me who, like I said, I consider myself a pretty quick typer, definitely a Braille power user of iOS. That's a real problem. It's a major productivity killer for me. You know, if I'm in a work setting and I need to be taking notes at a meeting, well, if I want to sit there and do it at 25 or 30 words a minute, that's fine, but I'm not going to get the notes I need. So that's the big reason I'm still on 10.3.3. And then also, if you have bigger chunks of text, we'll say anything more than about 5 or 6 sentences, the cursor just does not move as it should. And then sometimes, kind of like what you were describing, Thomas, with the VoiceOver grinding to a complete halt, that'll happen with longer blocks of text, especially if you have, you know, you wrote like, I don't know, 10 sentences, and then you go to the top to try to edit something, and say the first sentence, the VoiceOver cursor, or the Braille cursor in this case, doesn't know what to do. It pretty much slows down, almost stops. So if you're someone who does a lot of text editing with a Braille display, or a lot of text entry, iOS 11.0 might not be for you. You know, you might want to wait till the next, like Thomas was saying, 11.01 or 02 or whatever it is. And of course, AppleViz will keep you updated on how that is going in terms of progress. But these are issues that we know that Apple is working on. And, you know, there are things that will hopefully be resolved. And like you said, Thomas, no release is ever perfect. You know, these things were all designed by human beings. Human beings aren't perfect. And neither is software. They're designed by people. So there's always going to be a thing or two that's out there. Or even like here, you know, I live in North Carolina. There's always a bug around somewhere. So, you know, it's just unfortunately a way of life. You know, whether you can tolerate that bug or those bugs is going to really depend on you as a user. From the low vision side, I mean, there's nothing that I'm aware of. I'm not a low vision user.
Yeah, I'm not either. However, there's some moderate bugs for those that use Zoom and VoiceOver together. I thought were, I at least want them to know about the problem. It's kind of annoying. It's not that you can't get around it. It's if you have Zoom and VoiceOver on at the same time, you're unable to get into what we call the edit mode. We'll get into more details what that is, but that is to allow you to get into the mode that allows you to delete an app or move apps around, put them in folders. Unfortunately, that is not going to work in 11.0 together. Now, if you turn the Zoom off and go with VoiceOver, or vice versa, you go with the Zoom, turn off VoiceOver, and then you're able to do these gestures that we're going to speak about, these new options, but you're not able to do that. So I thought that was kind of a big enough deal, but again, it's not something, it's not like we're deleting and moving things around all the time, but if you are one of those people that do that, move around a lot frequently, this is going to be a real bothersome one. It's not a showstopper, but it's kind of an annoyance. I also know that with Zoom and VoiceOver, that when it comes to the 3 or 4 finger gestures, there are some issues with that. I would definitely read the blog about it in this in more details, but there are some issues with that. So it is going to impact the low vision somewhat, and definitely for what Scott's mentioned, the Braille. I totally agree with him. If you're a Braille display user and if you're a advanced user, as in you type very quickly and use this on a daily basis, that's for your life. I don't recommend going to 11 at all. One thing I missed before I'll let you get back to you is that you ever seen this, Scott? This is really bothersome to me. I mean, I've gotten so used to it, but if you're a Mail user, I use Mail heavily. And if you use the Apple Mail, I will typically swipe up to delete a message. The action is still very flaky at best, and it's really annoying because sometime I'll stay on that delete action mode, or it just randomly puts itself on something else. And it's so annoying because I'll go to the next message thinking all I have to do is just double tap and I'll delete it, and it doesn't. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And so I'm always having to flick up and flick back down just to make sure I'm still on the delete mode. If I'm not, I'll get myself back into the delete rotor action, and then I can delete. So it's very minor things, but it's after a while it becomes second nature. You just go keep flicking up down just to make sure you're on the right action. But we kind of seen this in iOS 10 where the action kind of disappears and doesn't default back to action. This is something different and something additional on top of this. I haven't seen it anywhere else, but the Mail app definitely has it, and that's another one I want to put out there.
Yeah, and that one can be really critical if you're a heavy Mail user. I am as well. With that particular bug, you know, when you flick up, yeah, you're typically put on delete, but you might still be in delete. In fact, I think that was the intended behavior, is that once you flick up, until you flick back down, when you double tap, you're always going to be, you know, nuking messages until you flick back down. But as Thomas said, it's not always consistent. So you might think you're deleting something, or you might want to try and open it, only to find out that you've done the exact opposite action, which is kind of critical in the sense that maybe you have that important email that you were wanting to read and you just deleted something, and well, now you just deleted that one when you were trying to open it. So it's certainly something you can work around by flicking up and down and verifying where you are in the rotor. But old habits die hard, and this one could really get you in trouble if you're a heavy mail user.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And you just got to make sure you do that up and down. Just make sure where your placement is. I just did it today. I thought I was in a activate to open, and I ended up deleting something that I wanted. And then I had to go all the way back out, go back into the all mailboxes, go back down to the trash, get it out, put it back into the inbox. And it happened to me quite often. It's more times than I care to want to do, but that's just how it is. But really, I don't think it's a showstopper either.
Yeah, you just got to be careful. And hopefully they'll fix it one way or the other, you know, with one of the upcoming releases. We'll just have to wait and kind of see how that pans out again.
Yep.
Stay tuned. You know, we'll definitely keep you updated. One of the new features, I'm kind of transitioning into low vision here a little bit, that we have is we've had invert colors. Now we have smart invert colors. But it's half smart, not entirely smart, because what you'll have... Well, let me back up. What you had before was you would turn invert colors on, and then invert colors would literally invert everything. Which, when you're working on the web, is kind of a problem, especially if there's pictures, you know, any kind of media that was also flipped around, so nothing looked right. You had to turn invert colors off. Well, with iOS 11, we have smart invert colors, which is supposed to not automatically invert images and other forms of media. But unfortunately, it's not working everywhere. You know, you have situations where it works great, but you also, as particularly on the web, you know, it's kind of a hit and miss sort of deal. So you have no idea for sure until you try it whether a particular website that you are trying to work with is going to be inverted correctly or not. The good news is that classic invert is still available. So you can switch to classic if you need to. And now, of course, in the control center, you have the ability to do other accessibility options, which means that you could, for example, set invert colors to your accessibility shortcut and then have something else in the control center if you're able to do that, if you have enough vision. So that was one of the low vision things that's kind of a challenge. I don't think it's a showstopper because, well, you didn't have Smart Invert before. So if it doesn't work, then you turn it off like you had to do previously. That's one of the, I would say, bigger bugs for low vision users.
Yeah, it's hard to consider that as a bug or a feature. I will say that it's not system-wide at this point. I think it's one of those work in progress. It is, as Scott says, we're both not low vision users. These are based on stories and reports we're getting from our sources, and it seems like there's certain places you would think it would try to invert it, and it doesn't. For one reason or another, Apple doesn't think it that should be inverted. I do know that they're open for suggestions, and low vision people out there, please do contact the Apple accessibility team. They want to hear all the things that you would assume that a smart invert would do. And so I want to keep that open for you. So I don't want anybody to be like blasting them and burning them down to the ground. It's that they really want more voices on this and how things should work. And my understanding, it doesn't work in all the apps either, just certain ones. Is that pretty much what you heard?
Yeah, it doesn't work consistent. It's not even consistent within certain apps, you know, even within the icons of apps on your screen. So if there's like some sort of animation or something like that to the icon on your screen, that's also not always inverted. Even if it's the same app, but you're 10 minutes later, you come back to it. The first time it wasn't inverted, now it is. So it's very much a work in progress.
Definitely.
I would say for the places where it works consistently, it's certainly something that's useful for people that require invert colors.
Right. So your listeners out there that are low vision, I do want to emphasize that one more time, is that Apple is aware of this issue, and they're just waiting for your feedback. So the more you speak up, not so much on AppleVis, because I don't, believe me, Apple is going to come to our site to read up all the problems. I need you to contact them by email or in person, whatever it takes, to let them know about that problem. So the Control Center, I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, there is a new design in the Control Center, and we're getting mixed bags of what we think of it. And I know Dave Nason on our team, he loves it. He loves the new Control Center. And for me, I tell you, from coming from WWDC, when they said this was going to be totally customizable, you're going to be able to place your own controls where you want to put it. And yes, for the low vision people, even voiceover user, you now have these controls that you can add to it within the settings. So you can put the magnifier in there. You can put accessibility touch, text size. There's a multiple things you can do with the control. Control Center for those that are low vision and that are blind. However, I was disappointed, especially because I was thinking customizable, awesome. I can put anything where I want, awesome. So I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to put Do Not Disturb way at the top. I'm going to put some of these things over here, put everything over there. And it's not like that at all. I was, let's just say I was kind of disappointed. But that's just my personal preference. Somebody, as I said, Dave loves it. My problem is that, yes, you can put these custom controls in there, but they're way at the bottom. I mean, I have to swipe all the way to get to the bottom of the customized controls that I want to get to. The controls that I use are almost always below the media. So you get the stock stuff, like at the top, you always get the airplane mode, Wi-Fi, cellular, Bluetooth, those sort of things. Those are always at the top. And then you got your media controls, and then below that, you got a few stock apps, like some other things that you can't change, lock orientation, do not disturb. And then finally at the bottom is your your controls that you finally get to customize and place any order you want. I don't know. I'm not happy about that. Control Center works just fine, don't get me wrong. Everything in it works beautifully. They have implemented a lot of 3D touch in there, a lot of rotors. So check those out. Listen to the voiceover hint when you go over stuff. They have hide a lot of new things, so you can actually activate a button through a rotor and do something within that particular control. But what is your take on the Control Center?
I kind of agree with you that it's sort of, it's half customizable. But why not go all the way, right? Like, if I don't want airplane mode in my control center, I don't have to have airplane mode in my control center. Or whatever, you know, cellular data. All right, well, maybe I don't care. I always leave cellular data on, you know. If you're going to go all in. But maybe even... Say, for example, you know, there's one of those 17 features that I really use and that I would use very heavily. It would be so much more effective if it was right there at the top. I just bring up the Control Center and it's the first option. So,
yep.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you that, it's kind of customizable, but not to the degree that I was left with anyway that it would be, you know, from WWDC. The impression I walked away with was, oh, all right, cool. That's one of those things that's been on Android for years, and it's finally coming to iOS, and it's going to be awesome, but it's half awesome, which I guess is better than crappy, but, you know, if you're going to go tell me it's customizable, it should be totally customizable.
Oh, no doubt.
The other thing with the Control Center is, why can't you put pretty much any setting you want in there? I think it would have been cool if you could have, you know, even as a voiceover user, I don't know how this would work visually, but what if there was a rotor option on every possible setting where you could just, you know, flick up and say, add to control center. Because there are a lot of things that are buried deep within settings that I might want to have access to, but I can't, you know, and that's the whole purpose of the control center, is so that these settings, which a lot of people use very heavily, that's why you would put them there. You know, if I have to go 3-4 options into the settings app, you know, it would be way nicer if I could just bring it up in the control center and deal with it that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are some of the new things in iOS 11 in terms of deafblind or braille users that you found to be pretty cool that you like?
Well, there are a lot. Now, again, as I said, I'm still on 10.3.3 due to some of the braille concerns. I mean, I pretty much don't use speech at this point. But there's a lot of good things, and it's unfortunate that these two bugs are there for me personally, because there's a lot of good stuff. As far as the biggest one, I'm not really sure. It's just user preference. For example, some people who have some hearing and some vision, or some people who have no vision at all and some hearing, or vice versa, now you have the ability through VoiceOver to either have subtitles read out through speech and or braille. So if you either subtitles or captioning, either one, if it's supported, Netflix is supported, and iTunes movies are also supported. I haven't played around with any of the others. I tried it on YouTube and did not have it working. But you know, that may change. I don't know. But for me, as someone who pretty much gave up on movies entirely, probably about 10 years ago now, maybe even a little longer, because I couldn't hear what was going on in terms of, like, when, you know, there's a scene where they're whispering or whatever, like, I would totally miss that. Mm-hmm. And now with the captioning and braille, and I'm a really fast braille reader, which you really do need to do, by the way, if you're going to use this with braille, I'm able to keep up with a movie. And that to me is huge, because it's something I've been missing out on for years and years, and now I have the ability to follow along just like someone else with just a hearing impairment who has vision could. So that to me has been a really big step forward. But I do have to say, this isn't necessarily a criticism of Apple, it's the way captioning works. If you're someone who's totally deafblind, if you know someone who is, they're not going to be able to now read a movie like it's a book. And the reason for that is that captions don't give you the entire story. They'll tell you that, you know, what's being said. And visually on the screen, they do different things. Like, for example, the captioning for one person speaking may be a different color. The captioning might move over the person that's speaking. It really depends on the way it's done. But none of that information is easily conveyed through Braille. So with the Braille captioning, you do have the words, but you don't have the context. So for someone who is totally deafblind, that's not going to really work for them, because, I mean, the words are pretty much meaningless if you have no context. Again, though, that's not an Apple oversight at all. That's just how captioning works. You know, you pretty much have to change the entire captioning industry and the way things are done to make it more inclusive, which would be nice. But then again, you'd have so much more information flashing across that Braille display. And if you're not a fast user, it's pretty much you're not going to be able to keep up with it. It's just, you know, you're talking about the normal speed of speech, and right, that's the rate that it's coming across. So
I was going to ask you about that, because I was thinking, yes, it was a nice feature, but how realistic is it? I mean, if you're a really proficient reader, I could not imagine. I've seen closed caption before, and sometimes those things can go 90 miles an hour, and I I admire you guys if you can catch up with that. But as Scott says, I think it just makes it even harder because you're missing elements. Not only you don't even know who's talking, you can assume who's talking, but also if there's any action that they're doing, like swinging a bat at you as they're talking, you're not going to know what they're doing. So I think it's a step forward, but I think you have to be pretty darn proficient. I don't know if you really would truly enjoy a show still. That's my only question to you. Would you still enjoy it as much as you think you would?
I do, because I can still follow along well enough with speech and the sound to figure out what's going on. And sometimes the captioning will say, you know, loud noises or something like that, which doesn't really help. But, okay, there's loud noises. I mean, there's a lot of loud noises. There's me cursing very loudly at my Braille display because it's not working with iOS 11. That's a loud noise, but that's totally different than, say, a loud clap of thunder or an avalanche or, you know, a low-flying plane. But there's still loud noises. For me, yes, it does help tremendously because I use it to sort of offset what hearing I have left. You know, so it's not like I have to constantly be looking at it to know what's going on. It's good for those times, like I said, when there's a lot of music in the background, for example. Maybe they're at a, you know, the actors and actresses are at a party, or for whatever reason, there's background music. That's when it really comes in handy for me. So I wouldn't call it a total bust at all. It just isn't, you know, because I've seen blogs and stuff. Oh, yeah, deaf blind people now can watch TV. And not necessarily. You can't go that far.
Yeah, it just comes down to personal preference and how much tolerance and how much you can adapt to that speed and stuff. But regardless, I think it's a step forward and it's a cool new feature. There's only one other feature that I know of that is for low vision deaf. I think that's going to be a big hit. I know it's going to be a big hit, and that is being able to type to Siri. So if you have any type of speech impediment issue, or if you are deaf, obviously, you can now use Siri. So I think that is a big game changer. I really am excited for that. So have you had the chance to use that?
Yeah, I did want to do one more quick thing about captioning, though. Sorry, I know it's kind of dragging on, but for low vision users, you now have the ability to make not only the text bigger, which we've had, but now it's able to stand out more from the picture. Before, captions would sometimes kind of blend in with the rest of whatever's going on. And now you can change the outline of the text so that you can make it stand out more. And you've got a lot of different options there to configure based on whatever, you know, your particular vision issue is or whatever you may need. So that's really, I think, going to be big for those who are low vision, you know, who not even necessarily want captioning. But remember, this also covers subtitles. So if you're somebody that likes to watch films in different languages and you don't really speak the language, this could be just as big for those people as the hearing impaired and the hearing impaired community. So there's a lot there. Now to move on to type to Siri, I think they did a really good job with this. I like the fact that not only that it's there, but you can set it up to give you all speech feedback, no speech feedback, or you can have it respect your mute switch, which is, I think, great. I love it that I can turn on my mute switch and it won't talk, but if I'm in an environment where sound isn't that big of a deal and it's not going to bother anybody, if I want that speech on, I have the ability. What's even cooler to me as a Braille display user, and this kind of can segue into another feature, is that now I can set up a Braille display shortcut to invoke Siri. So I don't ever have to take my hands off the keyboard anymore. I can just type to Siri and then press space with .8. You can also press enter on a Bluetooth keyboard, by the way. And it will come up either in text, You have to scroll over a little bit to get to it in Braille. Or again, if you do have your speech on, or your speech feedback set to either on or to respect your mute switch, you still have the ability to listen to the response. You know, there are sometimes, I know even people who are sighted who just don't feel like talking to Siri for whatever reason. You know,
sure.
Or you know, you may have a Bluetooth headset plugged in. You want to get something quickly done with Siri, and now you can do that and get the voice feedback through your Bluetooth headset or whatever connected audio device you might have.
Oh, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, exactly. So you can have it. You don't want everybody to overhear what Siri's talking, so your Bluetooth can hear it as you type into Siri. Hadn't thought of that. That's a good angle too. I like that.
Now the thing to remember is if you do enable type to Siri, you can't. Every time you press the home button, it's going to come up with that on-screen keyboard, or you know, you'll have the ability to type on the Braille display or whatever your access method is. But you won't be able to use your voice. The only way to do that with Type to Siri enabled is to turn on Hey Siri and set that up, and then you can still use your voice.
Exactly. That was what I was about to say. If you turn the Hey Siri on, you'll still have that option, but you still have the option to hold down the button to type. But if you just say Hey Siri, you can still invoke your voice. But so that was another cool feature. Now, there's not... You know, I hate saying this. There are a few new accessibility items in there that, on top of what we already talked. I suppose one of the bigger ones is the punctuations. You have a lot more control of the verbosity, so you can now tell how much punctuation you wanted to say. If you wanted to announce some punctuation more or less. You got the option to speak when you approach to a table. It'll tell you what column row you're at, if you're coming to a table, links, all the different types of verbosity settings you would expect from using a Mac or on a PC. Those are very welcome. One of the things that I found, and it's not going to affect a lot of people, but I do have a student that really loved this feature, the new pitch. You can actually... change the pitch sound of a person's voice. I have a client that has some hearing issues, so he's only able to hear the female voices more, and so if I turn up the pitch just right, then he hears it just perfectly. So I think it's going to be a welcome thing for people that like to change the pitch. I'm trying to think what else in terms of accessibility that's noteworthy that we haven't covered. Can you think of anything?
Well, while you're thinking about that, first of all, I'll keep with what you were talking about and talk briefly about pitch change. Unfortunately, and I think this will be changed soon, when you set the pitch to something else, it applies to every voice. So if you're using Alex and you want... Not our editorial team member, Alex. We wouldn't want to use him. That wouldn't be nice. But if you're using the Alex TTS and you set your pitch to 75%, every voice will shift the pitch to 75%. And that applies equally to speak screen and speak selection as well. So when you make those pitch changes, just be aware that you're not only changing the voice that you're currently using, it's global. I'm hoping they'll fix that, and we won't have to wait too long for that, because I don't think it's a major software change that's going to have to happen. But just be aware, if you change the pitch of one voice, you're changing it for all of them and all the different speech features. The other feature that I really like, and again, this is going back to Braille, I would even venture to say that for Braille users, this upgrade is... as challenging as it is, it brings a lot of new stuff. Not only a lot of new stuff, but some really powerful stuff. I talked about this in my article, but you know, I try to get everything in both audio and written form as much as I can for people. You now have the ability to customize Braille keyboard commands. you know, for years and years and years, I've always told Apple, hey, you know, you should add this. You should add that command, you know, so that it is kind of, you're more on an equal footing with somebody on a Bluetooth keyboard, for example. Just because a Braille user doesn't want to pull their phone out. They it's not really necessary. And that's way true, even more so now than it used to be, because you have the ability to customize Braille display keyboards to do a whole slew of different actions. Everything from invoking Siri, like I talked about earlier, to even setting up Bluetooth keyboard command equivalents so that you can, for example, format text quickly. You know, if you hit Command B, you can bold whatever text you want. Or even in the Mail app, you know, Control N for new message. I'm sorry, Command N for new message. I've been working in Windows all day. Command R for reply and all those sorts of things. And that's huge. That's a huge productivity gainer for Braille users. You basically now have the power of a Bluetooth keyboard and a Braille display combined with iOS 11. And that's huge. I can't even begin to tell you. You know, if they get these issues that I mentioned at the top of the podcast fixed, I'll be the first to be upgrading. Let's see, some of the other stuff specific to Braille, because again, like I said, that I think this is may even be a bigger upgrade for Braille users and speech users. Now you have the ability.
Doubt.
I'm sorry.
No doubt. No, no doubt. I agree with it. This is a, it's a lot bigger than people think, but there's a lot of new benefits for Braille on and this iOS, and it's just so great to hear all this stuff, but yeah, go for it.
So you also now have the ability, it's not working 100% of the time. Sometimes you have to do something to make VoiceOver realize that the text formatting has changed, but you now have another status cell. So you have a second one, and you now have the ability to know, for example, if text is bolded or if the text has, you know, underlined or if it's italicized. You now have that ability as a Braille user. If you have that status cell enabled. So that's I think, a pretty big thing, too, that will help bring the Braille experience more in line with what a speech user would use, and even, I would say, in some cases, make you faster. The other thing that they've done, and it works really well, actually, is you no longer have to fight with the translator to insert, you go back and you want to make a word plural. Before, you'd have to hit the letter sign and then S to make it plural. Now the translator knows, oh, yeah, well, that S is actually attached to a word, so I just need to add the letter S and not the word so. And I think that's really big, too. You know, especially if you look at students in education who use Braille, and They've been having to learn behaviors that are not consistent with what real Braille is and what it represents, just to work around these things. But with iOS 11, you don't have that anymore. It translates things just like you would write it on a note taker.
That's pretty awesome. I was just kind of going back through my notes of what else is new in terms of for VoiceOver users. There's three more things I've got down here, and one of them is a big one for me. All right, so Apple kind of went backwards and forward at the same time. It kind of went back to the iOS 9 approach, but yet they implemented a new iOS 11, so it's kind of a hybrid. And that is moving your apps and deleting apps. All right, so here's the deal with this. This is not a bug. This is how it works. Yes, we are going back to the gesture that we used to use in iOS 9, and that is you have to do a one-finger double-tap hold, and that takes you into the edit mode. Once you're in the edit mode, this is where you can do a variety of things that are new in iOS 11, which I love. Obviously, if you double-tap it again, like in iOS 9, it will just simply ask if you want to delete the app. But the new thing, what I like about it, you can move multiple apps at once. Yes, so if you swipe up, you can say, add this app to the drag session. That means you're going to be moving an app, whether it's one or two or three or whatever have not. You could just keep adding apps to the drag session, and then you can finally move it to a folder or create a folder, and it will all be shoved into your folder. This is going to be time saver by many, many moons. I am continuously moving things around. I don't know why. I just feel like I'm not using this enough. Oh, there's a new one. I want to put this here. And I'm constantly moving things around. I really like this feature. It's kind of a love and hate relationship because we were so used to the iOS 10 that we had in within the rotor, all we had to do was just go to edit mode and then start dragging. They did away with the swiping up in the rotor, so that's gone. So you have to put it in edit mode before you can use the rotor. So that's, to me, that's kind of a big feature. I really like this a lot. I think some people are going to complain and not like it that we had to go back to the double tap and hold. I understand it. I completely do. Some people have some, maybe they got some issues with the hands and they're just unable to do that. I get that. What is your thought on that, Scott?
Well, my thought is, I mean, okay, yeah. I mean, you do have that where you have to double tap and hold to get into edit mode. And, like, if you have a tremor or something, that could be an issue. But that's where things like Braille displays and Bluetooth keyboards come into play. And that still works. So if you're on a Braille display, just like you would do the one finger flick up equivalent with space and dot 6 or space and dot 3, it doesn't matter, either one that you want to use, you can still get into edit mode that way with a Braille display or a Bluetooth keyboard. If you use your up arrow or down arrow when you're on your home screen, you still have the ability to go into edit mode. So to that end, I would say they've really addressed a lot of the different needs that are out there, you know, for people with different access methods. And I like drag and drop. I didn't at first, but then when I was playing with it, I'm like, oh, well, I mean, really, the terminology is a little different, and they've added the ability to drag multiple apps. But other than that, it's pretty much the same feature set. You know, you're going to use the rotor in the same way that you had before, just a bit different vocabulary. Now you have the ability to take four, is the most I've done, four apps. I added them to drag sessions that were on various pages of my home screen and dump them into a folder. That's really helpful for me.
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to help. There's a lot of angle going into accessibility in terms of, it's not just specific for blind. They really did expand on some things in trying to help people in various stages of disability, which is I think it's kind of a bigger factor to that. But I agree with you. I think it's simple. I still think it's easier than when we had it back in the days when we had to figure out where it was before an app or after an app, or you had to wait for a certain sound to create the folder. It's way better than that those days. Those days were horrible, but I agree with you. Using a Braille display or a keyboard is by far still the simpler way to do it. There were some strange... Well, this one is in terms of for accessibility. Siri got some new voices. Is still the same female male voices, but they got a little bit better and natural wise. It does sound a lot different, and I think it sounds a lot better. I know that I used to use Siri voices as my primary voice, so in that aspect, you know, it could essentially help those that wanted a better sounding Siri voice to use as their main voice. You still have that option to do that. The one odd one, I didn't understand this one, Scott, for the life of me. I mean, in some aspect I do understand, but they move auto brightness into display accommodation.
that's a mainstream feature. Yeah, I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense, right? It's something you're doing with your display, your screen. But yeah, that's kind of a... Who's going to find it, right? Like, the mainstream population doesn't look in that section.
No, And they're going to be looking under the display section under settings, and it's not there to be found. And you have to go all the way to general, to accessibility, to display accommodation. They're going to be like asking themselves, why did you move this over here? I guess I get it. I think most visual people probably don't even use it. Maybe it is for people that, like you, myself, and low vision people do. But I found that one to be the most strange one. But other than that, that's pretty much all the accessibility stuff that I can think of on top of my head, unless you got something going. But a lot of new mainstream stuff. But is there anything you can think of?
Well, I think it's probably important to note that if you are, like you, Thomas, somebody who's used the old Siri voices and wants them, they're still available. You install them the same way you've done before with iOS 10. You go to, you know, general accessibility, voiceover, and then speech, and then, you know, find the voices you want that way. They have names now, Nikki and Aaron. Those are the U.S. English voices. I don't remember off the top of my head the U.K. and Australian ones, but you can look it up in my article. But the point is they're still there. And with regard to the new iteration of the Siri male voice, you know, yeah, it's at a higher sampling rate. That's why you're noticing there's probably a bit more inflection to it. Sounds a bit more natural. I did find, though, that the new Siri female voice doesn't work very well with voiceover. It gets pretty sluggish.
It does. It has always been an issue with the Siri female. There's always been some sort of a lag in there. So you are going to see some lag issues with that. And I'm not certain why that would be the case. You would think some of the big honking, big one like Alex, the whopping 900 meg, you think that would be more intensive. But, you know, we're talking about a very small imprint, and I have no idea why, but that's always been an issue. But there is a lag issue if you use a Siri female voice.
Yeah. I mean, it's still there. You know, like, you can try it. It's not going to hurt you to try it if you really want to. But I just found that it was too laggy for the little bit of speech I use to deal with it. But, you know, it's another option, so if people want to do that, they certainly can. I have noticed that Siri seems to be a bit more snappy as a general rule.
Definitely.
But it seems like as we go on with these releases, because I noticed this in 10 too, it eventually slows back down. My guess, if I had to make one, and it's only a guess, I don't have any full-on information about this, but my guess is that we're probably using a different API than the mainstream is at the moment, and that's why the, you know, goes through so much quicker. When you're on the beta program, you know, you're using an API that way less people are using than, you know, the people that are running what's on the public. So that one we'll kind of have to wait and see. You know, will Siri remain as quick as it has through the beta cycle and up to now, or will it slow down again once everyone starts to adopt iOS 11?
Right. Some of the mainstream stuff that does affect us that we use. I do have another love and hate relationship. Again, like we had in the control center, you know, how Dave and I had differences on that. I also have differences with the team when it comes to notification center. Oh man, where do I start with the notification center? This has changed quite a bit, okay? It's a little different. I think how they set it up is going to take some time for people to get used to it and to understand what's going on. The big factor here, I like the way it is. So that's where the love-hate relationship comes. It's funny, I didn't like the control center, but I really do like the notification center. Now, I get the opposite effect from some of the team members. They hate the notification center, how it is. Right now, when you get something that you haven't seen or it's just very recent, you're going to have this segment at the top where it's like, all by itself is individualized, so that means there's no clear section. It's like it's all by itself. So I have some sort of a a sports update that it tells me that such and such on the Royals is doing that and the weather is doing that. And in this section, there is no clear all. You have to do a swipe up, and there's a clear option, double tap it, and it clears it. Now, after a time, and I have yet to figure out the algorithm and how this works, but at some point, it will all move down to earlier today, yesterday, Wednesday, Tuesday, whatever it is. And those items, you do have the clear section and confirmed clear it all, so you still have that option, but it's a little bit to get used to. I'm really curious what you think of the notification center.
It doesn't really bother me either way. It's just, it's a change. So I'm just like, eh, whatever, you know. I tend to adapt to change as best I can. My issue with it isn't so much the notification center itself. It's when if I've had my phone locked for several hours and I, you know, hit the home button, all my notifications aren't there.
Right.
You know, you got to go in and you got to tap on the, you know, double tap on the notification center to bring them all up. I don't know if that's a bug or if that's what they wanted, but I kind of like, you know, if I haven't been in front of my phone in 12 hours, which is pretty rare, but it does happen. I want to be able to pull up all that stuff to get a summary without even unlocking my phone. Oh, okay, such and such texted me. Oh, we had a tornado come through here. I never even noticed. I was sleeping. You know, whatever the case is, I want to be able to know. Oh, okay, that's what I missed. And with 10, all my notifications are, since I've locked my screen, are there. So I can quickly get an overview of what's going on. We don't have that in 11.
That is a bug, or I should say we don't know if that's a bug. We think it's a bug, but Scott's mentioned that it is listed, I think, as a bug for us. For those that don't know, the lock screen and the notification center are the one and the same. It used to be two different apps going on, but you're going to see the same thing whether you go into notification center or the lock screen. They are identical. What bothers me is that I have cleared all my notification, and on the bottom it says view notifications. I was like, why are you showing me a view notification button when there's nothing there? And I'll double tap that, and he says, oh, you don't have any notifications. And like Scott says, there's times that we will unlock it. I know I have notifications, but it's not showing up. Sometimes you want to go down to that view notifications and try to double tap, see if that comes up, whatever, have not. But yeah, that is one annoying thing. And oddly enough, and I don't know if you knew this, but Apple calls that a cover sheet. I don't remember them saying this, but we have been told that they call this a cover sheet, even though VoiceOver still calls it a notification center. So I have no idea what right. this cover sheet is about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that's a bug, but maybe not. I don't know. But it can be an annoyance if you're somebody like me that's how you get your notifications quickly before you actually sit down and look at stuff. You know, when you hit that home button for the first time, or when you, however you invoke that, I don't know, what do they call that? I guess it's the lock screen. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how I used to get my summary, and that's I think more a functional thing, because I don't want to have to unlock my phone then go into notifications. I just want to be able to see what time it is and what notifications I have, you know, before I decide, oh, okay, I'm gonna interact with my notifications versus I can wait for a while. I can wait till I've had my coffee, and trust me, it's better for everybody that everything waits until I've had my coffee.
I think it's a work in progress, and it's one of those that I think it's going to get better over time. Let me think about what I'm thinking about. Some of my favorite, I mean, there's so many little things in iOS 11 that is over time. I am one of those people that I was kind of underwhelmed at first when I got iOS 11. I was like, There's no wow factor in here. Yes, there's some neat things here and there. But over time, I will say it kind of grew on me. And it got more and more as I found out about certain things because it's kind of hidden away and they get different things. Like, I know this sounds really silly, but, you know, it's just little things like this, though. If I'm in the App Store, which, by the way, got a whole new redesign. I really love that. So I'm downloading an app, and I say get it. And then, of course, you know, you have to install it, double tap, and now ask for my Touch ID. But it's cool. It has this new little chime. It did this haptic feedback that wasn't there before. And then I really like that little small feature. So there's lots of little small things like that that goes on in iOS 11. But some of the bigger things that I found to be quite cool for me, I am an Apple Music subscriber. I really like the new social aspect of this, where I can add friends or family to see what they're listening to, share a playlist with each other and things like that. And I can also share a playlist to outsiders. And I like that aspect of it. That's one of my big favorite thing. And there's some few minor things that are cool, but not something we would ever use often. But they opened up the NFID a little bit more, which is always a welcome thing. So if you will hear my podcast, you can share your password. If you're going to a friend's house and they have a Wi-Fi and they got some really long, hairy, god-awful password, you can now just use your NFID to bump each other's phone and I'll pass the Wi-Fi together. Or one of my favorite is the setup. So when I get a brand new phone, that part of the setup, you can just take my old phone, use the NFID, put it at the other phone, and boom, it starts doing the setup without me having to go through all the hundreds of millions of steps. I know that's I know I'm exaggerating there, but again, you know there's so many steps to it, but now you can just take that out. So there's just lots of little features in there that I really do truly like about it, that I find it very useful. One of my last one, I'll hand over to Scott. I know this sounds crazy, but I was on Apple TV. You know, you have this one-step setup now where you can set up an account with your cable provider, and then whatever app that you download that takes advantage of this new API call, it'll just automatically pull that credential. So if I want to download an ESPN, I used to have to say, well, okay, I'm on AT&T Universe, I have to put my password in, blah, 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 blah. And then I have to download ABC, put my credentials in, blah, 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 blah. Well, they put this in iOS now under settings called TV providers. And I know that sound is very small, but it's really kind of a step forward, especially if you watch a lot of media stuff and you don't want to deal with all the passwords. You can now use that one-step process for TV providers. It's also one of my favorite too. What about you, Scott?
Well, and the thing about the TV provider is that they've added a lot of new providers. Like for the US, Comcast is one that is now included. So, you know, you have a lot of subscribers on Comcast. So that's going to be good news for them that they can go in and now do the single sign-on and be done with it. Not only can you bump phones, you now can, if there are other iDevices in the area, or iOS devices, I guess we call them now, if you are close enough, you don't have to be actually touching the other phone, it'll come up on your iOS device that's connected to Wi-Fi and say, hey, such and such is looking for Wi-Fi networks in the area. Would you like to give them access to your Wi-Fi? So you don't even necessarily have to, you know, physically have the phones touch. If you're within a couple of feet of that person, you can now do that, which is handy if you're somebody that has a lot of guests over, or, you know, maybe even in a work setting where you have a semi-private but semi-public network, instead of having to give everybody in the conference some kind of, you know, password, you can still have the ability, if you want, you can turn it off to much more easily connect. They don't have to know the password, and they They just, you just give them permission, and there it is. I see up and downsides to that.
Like, yeah, no doubt. Like, no, I didn't really want to give it to you. Hello, stop that.
Yeah, get out of my way. But, you know, I think it'll be something that some people are going to find handy and some aren't. You know, it's, again, these are kind of smaller things, but it, the sum of all the small things can sometimes make the big difference. One of the other things that is with iOS 11 that is new is emergency SOS. So that, I think, is going to, you know, if you're, if you've been running the Apple Watch, you're familiar with SOS. You hit this sleep wake button 5 times to launch it, and then you've got like a 10 second countdown before it'll notify emergency services. Mm-hmm. What I don't like about it, but it's not that big a deal once you know, is that you set up your emergency SOS contacts in health. Well, why don't you just put it under emergency SOS?
I saw that too. That it was kind of crazy that they, you know, within the settings, you go to emergency SOS and you can turn this on off. And at the bottom, one of the new options out there for our listener is that you can actually add contacts that you want to notify. So if you initiate that 911 call or click it 5 times for your emergency service, it will go to the health app and find what emergency contacts that you placed in there that you want to notify that you initiated this. And I thought that was a really cool option. But like Scott said, it says right in there, it says you must set this up in the health app. And I get the medical ID is in there. I think that's what they were trying to do, is trying to make you set up your medical ID that has your emergency contact, so you aren't putting in two different places. They were trying to keep it in one place, but yet it was kind of weird how they kind of make you hop over to another app just to finish that process. You can put your contacts on there.
Yeah, and it means, for those of us who've been around a while who know about Springboard resets, you know, there's still a different way to do that. You can hold in the sleep wake button until the slide to power off comes up, and then, you know, hold down the home button for, I don't know, was it 3-4 seconds, and it'll do it. So you still have the ability to do your Springboard reset if you want it. That, by the way, is not specific to VoiceOver. If you're, you know, a low vision user or you're a mainstream user, you also can do a Springboard that way with iOS 11. So don't worry, they didn't get rid of it.
No, and they didn't get rid of the iCloud Drive either, just to let people know. It didn't disappear. It's just got a new name and a new makeover, a total redesign. It's called Files now. There are some really cool things about Files. I like the fact that you can add other services in there besides your iCloud, like my Dropbox and my OneDrive. There are some limitations at this time. I was told that the full features would be coming out. You can hear some of the review on this in my podcast I did on that. But Files is something new that I think is going to grow on me. I didn't use the iCloud Drive much, but I am starting to use Files more and more, especially if they incorporate a full feature for everyone, as in all the services. I think I'm going to be using that heavily. I think I'm going to put that baby on my home. It's that big of a deal. So that's kind of a new deal there too. And if you're a podcast listener and if you use the podcast app, if you find it, the podcast app to be kind of confusing in iOS 10, give this a try. And iOS 11 is so much better. It's much cleaner, more well-defined, and slimmer. There isn't a whole lot of drilling down to find things. It is straightforward, and I really like what they've done in podcast app. As an advanced user myself, I still don't use, I still use Overcast myself, and so but nonetheless, I think for beginners or people that don't need all that stuff, I think the podcast app is worth checking out too.
Yeah, I haven't really looked at the podcast app in a while, to be perfectly honest with you. I purchased iCatcher, I don't know, 6 years ago now, I guess it would have been. Wow. But it does what I need, so I don't mess around with it. But yeah, I know that some people are pretty happy with the new revamped podcasts app. To kind of go back to the Files app discussion, it does a lot more on the iPad than it does on the iPhone. And that's something we will talk about a little bit more before we end the podcast. But, you know, we were talking earlier about drag and drop. And it works on the iOS devices like your iPod and your iPhone. But with the iPad, you got a lot more options as far as drag and drop go. For example, if I'm in the Mail app and I'm composing a message and I'm in split view, I can then go back into the Files app, find a file I want, add it to a drag session, and then drop it in my mail, and it's attached. That's kind of cool, I think.
No doubt. It is really cool.
But you don't have to have both apps in split view to use it, but that's just an example of how split view really can come in handy. I think it is more, it is accessible for a voiceover user, but I still think it's more of a thing for the sighted population. But that's one example of where, you know, that might save you a little bit of time if you've got those two apps set up in split view and you want to attach a file to an email. There you go. On the iPad, you can also move things from photos to notes or notes into mail or whatever it is you want to do. You can drag and drop specifically on the iPad. So that's, I think, going to be really powerful. I think that once more people have the chance to play around with this, we're probably going to discover a lot more things that drag and drop will be good for on the iPad. So, but that's kind of where we're going with that. The other thing I wanted to mention with regard to the files, in the sense that we're talking about iCloud, is that, let's say, for example, Thomas, you have a lot of, you have your whole family on your plan, right? Now, yep. Now you can have, say you purchase, there's no 1 terabyte plan anymore, now it's 2. Let's say you purchased even the 200 gigabyte plan. Now you have the ability to share that with the rest of your family. So, you know, you could share that 200 gigs with your wife and your son or whoever else may be on that plan that you add, but you don't have to be using the same Apple ID. It's something that you can change yourself in the Apple ID settings. So if you do have one of those plans, now it's going to take you a lot further if you're in a situation where you want to have additional people using your storage space. The caveat to that is you can't do it on the 50 gig a month plan. It's got to be either the 200 gig or the 2 terabyte plan.
That's correct, but nonetheless, I think it's a great option to additionally to the family sharing along with what we do with calendars and stuff. So I think that's a welcome. They're just pushing. I know they're pushing very hard to. I know the cloud services is a very tight and hard competition going on between Dropbox, OneDrive, Google Share, and all that stuff. But even Google Drive is starting to be a little different, but that's for another day, another topic. But those are pretty much all the things I found that in iOS that I can highlight to you. Of course, there's obviously so much more, lots of little things here and there. But the iPad did get quite a few new options like that. The split view and the drag drop is pretty cool. I understand they changed the dock at the bottom. Didn't they combine the app switcher with the control center?
Yeah, no. The thing about the dock is now it's like on Mac OS where you can put all sorts of stuff on there. You're not limited to 4 or 5 items. That did bring about a new gesture, by the way. If you're a voiceover user, you swipe up with 2 fingers from the bottom of the screen and that will invoke the dock, which is a bit different in the sense that you have recent apps as well as whatever you've added. And all this is controlled, by the way, through the rotor. So let's say, for example, you want to make sure and get whatever you want in split view. You now have to do that. You have to swipe up with 2 fingers to get into the dock and then go to your recent apps or anything that's already in your dock. And then you can add it to either slide over or split view, you know, depending on what you want to do. So you know, it we're really starting to see, you know, Apple's been trying to market the iPad as a computer replacement, which is kind of a weird thing to do when you're selling Mac hardware. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and then you have the Bluetooth keyboard equivalent, which is VO with D for the dock, just like you have on the Mac. So you've got, you know, all these other things to factor in as well. And the other thing that I like about the iPad is that if you are running mail before, depending on which orientation you had set, your messages or your whatever inbox you were in or whatever folder would show up on one column, and then you would have your message that would open in the other column. And so you'd have to go to the rotor and navigate to containers and then flick down to jump, you know, between your list of messages and your currently open message. Well, now with the iPad and iOS 11, you can do a two-finger swipe right to jump from the messages list to the message that you want to read. And just like in Mac OS, VO with the letter J is going to jump you back and forth. So those are a couple of other new things that are mainstream, but that's how you use them with accessibility features.
Right. I like the panels. I don't know if you call them panels, but I like that you're able to jump from one panel to the next panel real easily like that. So iPad did get some significant update as well. But I think we pretty much exhausted everything on the iPad and iOS devices. But what we haven't covered, and I think we're going to kind of cover it just a little bit, not a whole lot, but I was thinking maybe we could talk to our listeners about the Apple TV. There are some new things in here, and I'll let Scott talk about this since he knows a lot. Well, he knows more than I did on what to expect with the Apple TV. So what did you find in Apple TV that people should be pretty excited about seeing?
Well, you probably know that I'm going to tell you that adding Braille support is my big thing, right? I mean,
oh, yeah.
Come on.
That's huge. I mean, it's just adding Braille support at all into a new device like an Apple TV is always a huge, huge step forward. And I get it. I'm going to hear a lot of this. I'm really underwhelmed with this new iOS and Apple TV. You know what? I get it. It is a very mature OS. We have gotten so used to it, and there's just only so much you can add to it. But this is probably one of the biggest one I think that we got to date, and that's definitely for the Apple TV.
Yeah, and not only with the Braille display, but also the Bluetooth keyboard. So most of your Bluetooth keyboard commands and your Braille display commands that you've become familiar with on iOS, they directly apply to TVOS.
Yes, you know, praise the Lord.
Yeah, no kidding. That's one of the things I really like about it, is there was almost no learning curve there with the new support. I was a little worried about that at first, but no, it works really well. Text input with a Braille display is a bit flaky still, but it can be done. And the big thing for me is the captions. Again, you've got the same low vision functionalities with TVOS and captioning, but you've got it in Braille too. So that to me is, for me personally, is really a big deal. To have equal access to captions, finally. But again, just like I said with iOS, YouTube isn't supported at this time. I don't know if they're going to bring that on board somehow or what'll have to happen. But Netflix and iTunes movies are supported. I don't know about Amazon because I haven't really had a chance to try that. My testing on TVOS has been rather limited. The other thing I would do, because it's late in the day as we're recording this, we have an announcement about some new rotor functions with VoiceOver on TVOS and the way that navigation has changed from TVOS 10 to 11. And I would highly recommend people check that out, because when you bring up TVOS 11 for the first time, you're going to find that a couple of the rotor options that you may have been familiar with are gone. And then we've got one option that is navigation, and that has just changed. It's still there, it's just different. So, but what's good about that is that a lot of the rotor options are now consistent with iOS, except for navigation, where you can flick up, down, left, or right on the home screen, for example. But again, I recommend that people check out our announcement on tvOS 11 for more details.
Exactly. What about our Apple Watch fans?
I didn't really... For voiceover users, I don't think there's anything really new. I know that they've done some things with the dynamic type on the watch, and they've done a few low vision things, but I don't really, you know, as far as accessibility, sure, notice any differences. You know, you've got a lot of different workouts and stuff now, which are helpful.
Right. I think on the Apple Watch, what I've seen, there's a lot of mainstream features, not so much in accessibility. I didn't see a whole lot of changes in there. If there were any, they were very minimal.
But that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it's a much less complex operating system.
Oh, yeah,
so,
no doubt.
You know, what I would like to have seen and still would like to see, especially now with the new LTE watch coming out, is independent Braille display support. Because if I have a watch and I want to use it and I don't want to take my phone with me, if I'm a Braille display user, I still have to do that. So, you know, that kind of kills the any enthusiasm I would have had for the LTE watch. Is, you know, yeah, it's great, I can use it independently, but actually I can't because I can't use it with Braille.
It would have been cool to have TTY on it, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing with TTY is that it's, in its current form anyway, obsolete and becoming even more so. The FCC is in the process of making up all these regulations for real-time text.
Yep.
Which is supposedly going to be backward compatible with TTY, but it's also going to make way for a lot more digital modes that might be more effective for most users, especially those, you know, that are on the grid, that are online. But you still got those people out in the middle of nowhere who are on their copper lines that have had the same TTY machine for 30 years. So it's kind of a complicated process. But I think what you will eventually see is some kind of a real-time text application where, you know, TTY mode on the iPhone is basically, that's what it is at this point. You know, you're going to, whatever happens with real-time text, you're probably going to get that TTY format still. The thing about that is, though, that I think with some of the regulations that are still being worked on is we don't know how that's going to apply to wearable technology.
That's true.
You know, and that's the kind of challenge with, you know, you take a look at, say, for example, the WCAG guidelines for websites. They had to do a major overhaul of those because a lot of things when they were originally drafted that were rules, they don't apply to some of the things that we have on the web now. And they certainly didn't really apply to mobile applications. So, you know, just like everything, it's kind of an ongoing process.
Mm-hmm. At some point, they'll get a standard and stuff like that. But, all right, so let's come up with the conclusion. What is your overall thoughts of iOS, where you were to now, what do you think our users, you know, this is like Christmas for a lot of people. They waited all this time. When they opened up on Christmas Day, what is your thoughts? I know you mentioned a couple of major issues with the Braille display, but kind of an overall conclusion, what you think of your experience with iOS 11 and what you thought about it.
Well, for me, it's more a birthday present. In fact, 2 years ago, I think it was iOS 9, came out on my birthday. So, and, you know, we're 3 days after my birthday as iOS 11 drops. So for me, it's a birthday, but be that as it may. I mean, because I don't have enough reminders and I'm getting old. I just can't get past those bugs as a Braille user. But that said, you know, people, Apple doesn't care about accessibility. I don't agree with that either. You know, yeah, they should be held accountable for their bugs. I totally agree. You know, when you develop a screen reader, that's sort of the commitment you're making. But at the same time, to sit there and say, they don't care. Yeah, they do. We wouldn't have all these new features if they didn't care. You know, should they have been better when they released them? Maybe. But you know, it's like everything. It's a work in progress. And whether you should upgrade or not, because I already said I'm not at this point, mm-hmm. is going to depend on your situation. And if you're a low vision user, there's, I would say, you know, quite a few minor tweaks, and they've done a lot of cleanup, visually speaking, on, you know, different apps and the way they work, the stock applications. As I say every year, if you can, go to an Apple store or Best Buy or something that's running iOS 11 and check it out before you do the upgrade on yours. Because as we know, within, what, probably 10 days of iOS 11 going live, you're not going to be able to downgrade. And downgrading isn't exactly easy to do either. So if you can, check it out on another device. Definitely look around Apple Viz, and there may be other low vision resources out there that I'm not familiar with, but do your research before you upgrade. You know, we have to emphasize that every year.
I have a pretty similar consensus to you. I pretty much did my rant and raves at the beginning. I'm telling you guys, and I'm not telling you it's just because I'm some Apple fanboy or something, but I'm honestly telling you, being open and frank with you, when I say the Apple accessibility team did a great job, believe me that they did. I'm not going to go in numbers, but I tell you, we had numerous, I mean, lots of serious bugs going into this, and they have just nailed a lot of them out of it. And, you know, it's unfortunate with any beta. You're going to have some issues when it first drop. So I think at the first impression that I had, and I have heard from other people, they were kind of underwhelmed of what iOS 11 had to present. It wasn't like a whole new, there wasn't like a bunch of really noticeable changes other than there's a few things, notification center and the control center, they're kind of different, but it was one of those that grew on me. And I'm being honest, is that at first I was kind of like, well, it's not really much here, but it kind of grew on me over the weeks and months to come, and lots of lists of different things I start to find. I said, oh, this is pretty cool, and the App Store is a lot better. There's just a lot of improvements, nothing radically new, so that's, I just want to forewarn you on that. So I'm totally with Scott. There's no way, I'm so sorry, but I know some people disagree that Apple should be doing a better job. You know what? Until you see what they do in the background and what they have done over the summer with all this stuff, then I'll say you have the floor to talk about. If you weren't in that process, then you have no idea what they went through and what we had seen and what we have today. It is night and day. And so I am very happy in what they've done. I think iOS 11, for the most part, is usable as a voiceover user other than a Braille user, which is very unfortunate. That was a work in progress. They were trying to fix it. There was a lot of conversation going back and forth, and we tried to get that nailed out. And unfortunately, it just didn't get done. But it will be, I promise you, the fix will come out, I assure you. And they do care. I promise you, they do care very much. So I really don't want to see a lot of negativism about how Apple dropped the ball and stuff like that, because that's not true. Nothing is perfect. You can only do so much. And in the little time that we had, it's just impossible to nail every bug out. My overall experience so far to this point, after I used it for a while, I loved it. I love all the little small tweaks in here and there. It is usable, and I don't have any problem telling people, if you have a moderate tolerance and higher, definitely go for it. If you're a low tolerant, or you just got this gut instinct that there's some bugs that you may not be able to get over, that's fine. Stay where you are. And like Scott said, you have to be an advanced user. It's a hard thing to do, but if you don't know how to do it, I don't recommend it. But you do have this time frame where you can test 11 out for a while. If you don't like it, you can go back to 10.3.3. But if you're a beginner user and you don't know what I'm talking about on that, I would not advise doing that. Just stay at 10.3.3 until you get to see iOS 11 for yourself, and that's something you want to do. And that, I think that pretty much what Scott said too. And And that's everything there is to know about what's new in iOS 11. And, of course, there are numerous blogs. You probably have already seen that, and lots of different podcasts out there that goes over all the different aspects of iOS 11 and Apple Watch, Apple TV, and stuff like that. So be sure to come to the website. And always, if you find new bugs that isn't in our bug list, definitely let us know about it. We want to know about it. We want to make sure that we got a consensus that there is an issue. But as always, if you find a bug, I want you to do this. I always want you to report this first to Apple. Report it to Apple and the accessibility team. Then come to our site and let us know about it. Please, please, please do not put it on our site thinking it's going to be noticed by Apple or Apple's going to see it, because they aren't. So I want to make that very clear to everybody, okay? What do you think, Scott?
One more point to add, if you are thinking, well, okay, they said I could revert, so I will. Well, first of all, you have to have iTunes. Second of all, you're going to have to do, you're going to have to find what they call an IPSW file. And it's just, it's not an easy process. So yeah, if you're a beginner user, I would strongly suggest that you consider whether, you know, the upgrade at this point is worth the risk to you. And I think for the most part, you know, it's a pretty solid release. But yeah, I think that's going to about do it for this particular podcast, number 52. This thing's getting old. You know, it's going to be a senior citizen before we know it.
We are too.
Yeah, well, speak for yourself there, buddy. All right, well, thank you for joining me for this podcast, Thomas, and thank you for all one of you who probably listened all the way through to the end. And we will catch you again on another AppleViz Extra. So for AppleViz.com, this is Scott Davert saying bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AppleViz Extra. To learn more about us, visit our website at www.appleviz.com. Follow us on Twitter @AppleViz and like us on Facebook.